0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Let's go straight to Gillian Broad, because they're in a bit of difficulties up in the very, very busy Animal Pound DSPCA in Mount Vernon Road, Mount Venus Road, indeed, in Rathfarnham, on the outskirts of Dublin. Gillian, what's the problem?
We've no water, basically, and we were. I was just actually on the Irish Water website, and it popped up to say that there's a pump station interruption, so that's only just appeared. But the problem is we've no water, so we've used all that we have here. So we've got around nearly 300 animals here on site, plus animals in the veterinary clinic. We've enough water just about for them to drink for today, but hoping that the water is actually going to return, which it says at 6 p.m. this evening, but it's making it difficult to us to do any things like cleaning, cleaning the kennels, the surgery, and even the poor staff aren't getting their teas and coffees or toilet.
So the water's completely stopped?
Yeah, we've been stopped. Now, it's not just us, it's also on the road as well.
Okay, and were you told this was coming?
No, we weren't told this was coming, and we reported it this morning first thing, and we ordered a water truck to come up and provide water for us. We were basically, nobody had been in touch with us since, but I noticed that I think after we went to social media, it's now been put up on Irish Water website to say that there is an interruption to the
and
service.
And where do you order a water truck?
Well, you basically get it through the Irish Water emergency system. You can actually put in an order for a water truck to come, and they will provide you with a very large container.
So is the water truck coming?
We don't know. We haven't heard anything from them.
How much water would a horse drink a day?
Horse will drink between 25 and 30 litres a day.
Wow.
And we're lucky it's not as hot as it has been, so it's quite good.
So it's nothing to do with the drought or the warm spell. It's to do with a breakdown,
absolutely. And it's one of these things, you know, if we knew it was coming, then we could obviously prepare, even if we'd known earlier, because you don't know.
It's not the type of problem that can be sorted out by going running down to Lidl or Aldi or Tesco.
Well, we've done that this morning already, because we had to go down and get water, drinking water, which was more for the humans, because we had some for the animals, but it was more for the humans. But absolutely. And it is just one of these situations, and it's one of these things you don't realise until you haven't got it, just how critical it is.
So much water, what type of animals have you got there? You have horses?
We've horses, we've got dogs, we've got cats, we've got rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, gerbils, we've got terrapins, tortoises, we've all the wild animals. And because obviously we deal with sick, injured and cruelly treated animals, cleaning the kennels is very critical for us, and that does involve using water and mops and buckets and hosing out things.
Yeah.
So, you know, it has been a little bit difficult this morning. Now,
have you contacted the very, very helpful, especially if they can manage it outside emergencies, Nutgrove Fire Station?
We haven't actually got that bad. It's not become that bad yet.
Okay.
But as I say, we were very much in the dark up until 10 minutes ago.
Okay, well, now we put in a call to Irish Water around 1
fantastic.
O'clock. But anyway,
may well have helped the whole thing. So let's just fingers crossed that everything comes back to us this evening. But if there's anybody in the area...
And how did you manage during the very hot weather?
We managed quite well, because we obviously had the water and everything up here, and we just had to make sure that the animals were exercised early in the morning or later in the evening and weren't out during the heat of the day.
Great. Yeah. You didn't get a goat in over the weekend from Killaudra, no?
No, we didn't get that goat in. We have a fair few up here already.
Well, I can see there's individual firefighters and DFB saying they obviously have to go through their hierarchy, but they say we will gladly help out. If you're stuck, just give them a call in Nutgrove or whatever.
That's fantastic.
And once they get permission, they'll be on their way.
Okay,
thanks indeed, Gillian. Gillian Board, the DSPCA. Patricia, a scam over the weekend. There's a lot of it happening. Just unfortunately, you've lost a lot of money, but this is a warning to people. What happened, Patricia?
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me on. I was scammed. We have a daughter who's travelling abroad at the minute, and she bought a new SIM card in Bangkok Airport. And then we got a text on Sunday, just gone, to say, Dad, mm-hmm. I've lost my new phone. I'm in the store now. This is a replacement phone number.
Okay.
Would you be able to lend me money to get the new phone? I'll give it back to you on Tuesday when the bank's open. So, of course, you know, the person who I'm dealing with is my daughter. We weren't going to see her in trouble over in so far away. So of course, we would help out with this. So, to cut a long story short, firstly, we were hacked through our family WhatsApp because the message came in, "Hi, Dad, can you help us?" So that in itself was scary enough. And then I was asked, the person was very persistent in all this. So in hindsight, I should have known it wasn't our daughter talking. And
but what about the language that was being used? Was that convincing?
Looking back, Joe, on some of the texts, because we kept a copy of everything, she wouldn't be so persistent. And some of it, you know, some of it was okay. It was like, you know, come on, ma'am, like, you know, it's my choice to ask for the money. I have the money, you know, in my account, so I will give it back. I just need to get my phone, you know, as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, my other phone is not working. Now, we were to and fro with giving this money to her, Joe, because it was like, you know, what are you paying so much money for the phone? Can't you get a second-hand phone to do you until you come home? Ma'am, it's my choice, she said. Please give me the money. You'll have to send it through your Revolut because that's the only way I can get it.
Yeah. And the amount is 1260. You're obviously suspicious, but we don't know who it was. It wasn't her. And how did you do the Revolut? Because the Revolut are pretty good on verification and this person? And
you see, the day that was in it, I was so busy doing things, so I was kind of not 100% into this.
Yeah, okay, you were panicking.
At the same time, I knew I had to give her my Revolut card number. So I sent her that, and she then asked for, because like she was over the other side of the world, and then she asked for my the password code. So Revolut did come in and say, do you give this person authorization? But this person was our daughter in trouble. We gave authorization to take money out of my account to give to our daughter, who was going to give it back on Tuesday. But so the following day, we got a photo in our phone from our daughter. Oh, we've arrived in our new hostel. And I said, now, you know, you have to give that money back to us. Tomorrow is Tuesday. You know, we need the money back. And she goes, what money? And as soon as she heard something, she was on the phone immediately. And she was distraught because we were scammed, basically. The money was given to this person.
That's when she realised that's when you and her realised it was a total scam. Yeah. And it's the first she heard of it.
It's the first she heard of it because we don't hear from her every day. So it was like she was in trouble. She needed a phone. We had to give her the money for the phone. But the money is gone to this person who claims to be our daughter.
OK, I saw Sinead's still there. Sinead, we're just fixing the line with Sinead, but another scam. So the message is ring. First of all, ring and you'll recognise the voice of your daughter. Any other advice?
Well, she said to us, don't ring, don't make contact with us. I will ring you the next morning or the next day when I get my phone. Because she was going in to collect her phone.
She was covering that option.
Yes.
She was closing off that option.
Yes, exactly. So we didn't think anything of it. And I was like looking back at the text, we literally kept everything. We've blocked the phone, that phone number immediately. Mm. We went to the guards. The guards have been very helpful and are still looking into stuff.
I just wonder, can parents think when they get a text like that and looking for a lot of money, can they send back a question? What age is granny, or what is our dog's name, or who died 2 weeks ago? You know what I mean? Is there?
You know something, Joe? Since this has happened, anytime she's come on the phone, we ask her questions that only she will know.
Okay. Okay.
You know, because I'm just afraid to give anyone anything. Like,
yeah, well, that's not a bad
stage.
Not a bad idea.
We were scammed.
How's she getting on apart from that?
She was obviously very, very upset over the whole thing because it was her fault. So she's thinking that we have to pay back this money, you know, that we owe, you know, we lost this money.
That's a lot of money.
But Revolut wasn't quite working. I think we were just passed from village to Jack with the Revolut, to be honest. They just have a chat line. They don't have anyone you can talk to about this. And they did sort of, you know, after umpteen texts, I've sent them everything that I have. Like the money that was taken out was put into a Mac store, and like there's references and everything on my Revolut. So I would have thought they would have been able to, but they came back and says because I gave the authorization, they cannot do anything. But the authorisation we were given, Joe, was to our daughter.
Just the statement from Revolut. We're sorry to hear our customers fallen victim to financial crime. Revolut's committed to fighting financial crime, and our AI model warns the vast majority of customers being targeted by criminals. Revolut is working hard to raise awareness of financial crime with regular communication to our customers, as well as fraud warnings for suspicious transactions. We urge customers to always double check the account details before they make any transfers. But you actually, you gave them your number, didn't you? And your
We gave our daughter the number, who had got a standby phone, and she was getting her new phone. So yes, it was my fault.
If a customer, I know you understand it, and if a customer makes a transfer when feeling panicked, rushed, or pressurised, this is a warning sign that something could be wrong. If you are a Revolut customer and you think you may have been a victim of fraud, which you were, freeze your account immediately in the Revolut app, and contact Revolut for help via the in-app chat, which is. I think it's Ryanair. They all do the same.
Just, very hard to talk to them. You're literally, I've been talking to about 20 different people.
Okay. But they're basically saying you gave the details. So it's,
I gave the authorization.
Stay with us, Patricia. 51551 text. Sinead, what happened? It's about 2 months ago.
Hi there, Joe. Yeah, about 2 months ago, I got a text saying, "Hi, ma'am, my phone is broken. I'm in a phone shop. And because we can't get through to the my account here, can you send me, I think it was like 550 for a new phone." And I said, "Which of you is it?" And I named, and that's the mistake I made. Well, I didn't make any mistake in the long run, but okay. I said, is it person A or is it person B?
Okay.
Instead of saying, just which
who
of you
is it?
So they gave me the name. So I said, okay.
No, you gave them the name?
I did.
You
I
said,
did.
Is that you, Joe Duffy?
Yeah.
And they said,
is it Joe or is it John?
Yeah, John. And they said, yes,
he said, it's John.
Yeah.
So I said, well, that's okay. I'll do that for you. And he said, all you have to do is whatever. I don't know, press click on the thing, whatever it was. So I just didn't feel comfortable with that. I said, you know what? Can you call me?
Yeah, great.
And he said, no, I can't call you. My phone is broken.
Ah.
I said, but you're in a phone shop. Wouldn't somebody lend you a phone?
Well done. This is all happening on text, by the way.
All by text, yeah. So I stopped then, and I decided then to phone my son. And I phoned him on the landline, thinking his phone might be broken. Whatever. And of course he was at work minding his own business and he had no broken phone. So then I realized this was a scam.
Right.
So what made me suspicious was I got something like, oh, well, it's okay. If you don't want to do it, that's all right. And he'd never talk like that,
Okay.
And that made
he didn't
me really
say, I'll never talk to you again.
When I
win the Nobel Prize for physics, you're not coming to Oslo with me.
No.
Yeah,
no,
okay, I understand.
So I just got more suspicious by the second. So anyway, then when I realized it was a scam, I decided I'd go back in again.
Okay.
And I said, it's grand. I've got it all sorted now.
Well done.
Just tell me what to do. And I'll click on the link. And he got very happy, or she, or his, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did a bit of a Mrs. Brown on him and told him that I realised he was just a scammer.
Well done.
And buzz off.
Okay.
And that was the end of it.
Our words to that effect. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. Okay, Sinead, well done. And Patricia, the only thing I can say is that you've probably saved a lot of other people a lot of money, but I'm sorry that you lost.
Unfortunately, I lost €1,260.
Terrible. Yeah. Okay, thanks indeed. Right. Thank you both. Joe with RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Peter, good afternoon. It's a very difficult situation you and your family are in. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Just wanted to highlight really the appalling service being offered by GPs to the elderly and vulnerable with this policy of non-house calls. So just to make a long story short, if I can, my mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in 2021, the beginning of 2021. So she's had chemotherapy and that didn't work. And so effectively she's been in and out of the hospital system over the last year and a half. And but during that period she was in hospice respite and, you know, she survived all of that. And so effectively for the last year we've been trying to get a GP to call to the home. So I've actually been acting as her GP, would you believe, for the last year. So a woman who has ovarian cancer with no hope of recovery, really, hasn't had her bloods done for over a year. And matter what we do, we just can't get her GP to come to the house. Everything is prescribed over the phone, so there's no problem with getting medication. But this policy seems to be everywhere. You know, I've spoken to, you know, hospital managers and complaints after complaints. I've spoken to the HSE directly, it just seems to be a common occurrence that they're quoting COVID, obviously, as one issue and insurance as another issue, which I just don't understand how insurance comes into something like this.
And did they say the hospice might have some responsibility?
No. My mother was part of the community care team, who are absolutely wonderful, and they would check in with her on a regular basis. But a lot of that is by video and an occasional call. But, you know, in March of this year, she was deemed sort of well enough to manage her own symptoms, if you like, and referred back into the GP system. So since March, having been referred back to the GP system, no GP has come to her. So, you know, so I can't transport her anywhere. And obviously, at her age now, she's surpassed her 90th year. You know, she's got a morbid fear of going to a hospital because she fears if she leaves the house.
But you're saying she needs bloods done?
Absolutely.
There's no paramedic or there's no system in place.
No system, Joe. If I phoned a locum, needs to get a discharge from her own GP, but they can't get through to the GP. A private doctor who I've spoken to won't come out without access to her file. So you're caught up in a catch-22 situation there.
And do you think this is a broader issue that would affect a lot of people who are at home and need?
I gather there's 20 to 30 complaints made to the HSE about this issue on a daily basis. You know, I'll give you an example. I phoned her district health surgery and got speaking to the district nurse. And the district nurse referred me to the HSE, gave me a hotline number, told me to ring it. There would be six options, and one of those options would be the community doctor scheme.
Okay.
I phoned the number, listened to all six options, and there was no community doctor scheme. So that was one part of the HSE referring me to their head office. I got speaking to their support team in head office, and they never heard of a community doctor team, and they obviously sympathise with my situation, but they just, you know, they're getting these complaints on a daily basis. You just can't get a doctor. So I made reference to your researcher that, you know, I have a 93-year-old father and a 90-year-old mother, and our state is 100 years old. So, you know, they've contributed to the state throughout their life. They built this state, and yet at their time of need, out of sight, out of mind is basically the way I feel about it. And I just think it's appalling. And I did say, and I don't understand why in the HSC we've got so many intern doctors in hospitals that, you know, that as part of their training, that there can't be a team of people who would be going out to see.
And the nature of the blood test, it's not a pinprick blood test that she needs, is it, that?
Well, Joe, I'm not a medical, obviously. So, you know, with cancer, one of the things that you would look out for is, you know, a difference in blood levels or whatever might be in the blood. But the fact that she hasn't had a blood test for over a year is a terrible situation. You know, we don't know whether her tumor is growing, if it's advancing. It appears to be, but we don't know. We can, you know, the only way I can get her you know, medical attention would be to have her hospitalised by ambulance, and the fear of that is something, you know, the problem. And then, you know, she's in an anomaly situation, you know, as I mentioned, in that where she actually lives, she's between two hospitals, Tallaght Hospital and Meath Hospital. The Meath Hospital is where our oncology team is, but because of where she lives, she has to be transported to Tallaght Hospital, and then from Tallaght Hospital transported to the Meath Hospital, and all of this through, you know, a pain threshold, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I came upon, I have a Croatian lady that works alongside me, and her mother-in-law, who's been so good to me, is the district nurse in Slavonia. And she was telling me that basically her job as the district nurse in Slavonia is that she works in the hospital from, you know, morning Monday to Friday. She does, you know, administrative work in the hospital. And then in the afternoon, every afternoon, she visits on a rotational basis the sick, the elderly, the infirmed, those that can't travel to the hospital.
Yeah, okay.
And she will assess the needs of those patients when she gets there. And if there's a problem, a medical problem, she has a team of five doctors, one of which will call within a half an hour, and, you know, the medical side of things is looked after. And that's a country that, you know, has been ravaged by war in its time, and yet free service, medical is free.
And then you'd be only ringing the stand-in GP if it was an emergency, isn't that the...
Yeah, that's it. Look, you know, what happens is, you know, I mean, first of all, as I said, you can't get the GP. Secondly, you know,
you've never spoken to him or her.
No, and of course they can't talk to me as well, Joe, because, you know, GDPR the issues that are there. But I mean, to get a GP to actually make a telephone call, you know, my father had to drop a note into the surgery pleading with the person in question to make the call. But it's not just the person in question that I'm talking about. It's the system.
The system, yeah, of course.
It's the system, you know. And you know, I have to say, over the many years that my mother has been looked after by the practice, they've been brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But now it's come to a stage since COVID where you can't get a doctor out. So, you know, realistically, the next time my mother leaves the house was probably going to be the last time.
Oh, God, don't say that.
And, you know, and that fear that's there is, you know, in one way, it's spurring her on, because she's done so well to now. But surely there has to be a system in place where, you know, somebody who cannot be transported to the hospital, that there's somebody can come out and actually look at her, test her. I'm only physically, I Google everything she tells me. And,
okay,
you know, and as you know yourself, Joe...
You're told not to do Google doctor.
Well, you're told not to, but, you know, I have to make a decision.
Yeah.
Do I tell her what I'm reading, or do I make it up as I'm going along? Likewise, when I'm doing her, you know, I do her blood pressure on a Sunday, every Sunday when I'm with her for a couple of hours, and I do a couple of blood checks or blood pressure checks with her. And, you know, once or twice it's been quite high. But, you know, and I have to make a decision there and then, do, you know, is this an emergency or is it going to come down if, you know, if she relaxes or whatever?
And Medidoc doesn't do it either, would it? Because she needs tests, doesn't she?
She does. She needs somebody to come out and physically assess, you know, where this tumour has got to, what her bloods are telling the doctors.
Okay, stay there, Peter, because Marguerite is on the line, 0818715815. Marguerite, you're saying you had the same issue with your late father. What was the scenario?
I did. He was elderly and he died at the age of 97. And, you know, he was quite ill. He was he had disability as a result. And I couldn't get the GP to come and visit him. He'd visit all right to give him a jab for the flu, but wouldn't visit him otherwise. The answer was take him into hospital.
Oh, God.
97.
And what did you do?
I looked after him at home.
Okay. But they said, get an ambulance, dial 999.
Yeah, I had to take him into hospital once, and I'm chronically ill myself, as was his wife. And, you know, I had to stand there all night. And he was there for a long time. Eventually, they sent him home.
And why did a GP say they wouldn't come out?
They don't visit. They don't make house calls. Simple as that. Not anymore. Not for many, many years.
Is that a blanket ban, like, or is it? You think
it's just they're just so busy and they spend their time giving out prescriptions. And I've had the same said to me personally: call an ambulance for yourself. So I've stayed at home and toughed it out.
God, God.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't even want to die in a hospital.
Yeah, Peter, yes.
Yeah, Joe, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, my mother was in, you know, severe pain, and she's got a great pain threshold.
Let's see, can we get more reaction? Now, stay with us, Peter. Stay with us, Marguerite. By the way, Dublin Fire Brigade have been on about the situation that the SPCA contacted about 1:45. They've no water because there's a breakdown and they can't... Well, they've now got a reply from Irish Water saying there is a breakdown, but they've been... they've been aware of it, the DSPCA are, because they need water for their animals. Dublin Fire Brigade is organised with Dublin Civil Defence to go over to the DSPCA to fill a tanker of water. They don't. I think Gillian said they'll manage until 6 o'clock. So there, that's started. Rosemary, good afternoon.
Hi, yeah, I just heard Peter speaking there, and I just wanted to say my mum had cancer a number of years ago.
Thank
and.
You.
I think that the GP wasn't really part of the cancer team, and anything, you know, it wasn't really the GP's fault. I don't think it's, I think it's the system. And also, I think the GPs used to have to go out at 12, between 12 and 3 and do all their house calls and get their lunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was like probably they weren't getting lunch, because I had a brilliant GP, and she was just so amazing. And when she couldn't fit things in, she'd give people money for pay for their taxis to go down to the GP, you know, because they couldn't bring themselves down, you know. So I don't think I think it's a system now. I know it went back to my mum was ill in 2014, 2015, and we found it very difficult to get anyone to come out to the house ever. And I really don't think it was anyone's fault that they didn't want to. I just think they're overrun.
So what?
You know?
So what did you do? Eventually, did you ring an ambulance?
Yeah, she went into hospital twice with sodium. Her sodium dropped down too low, and she was shivering. And then you'd ring the GP, and they just tell you to ring 999. And she did have to be in hospital those times, but then you have to go in through A&E. She had to go through A&E a number of times with cancer. So that wasn't ideal either, you know, because, you know, she wasn't fit for sitting in a chair for hours, you know. So okay. I don't know what the solution is. I just know that something should be worked out for people. Like, the carers are the ones, they're the angels of the world anyway, and they're the ones that are left with these terrifying situations, really, you know, and it's unfair.
Yeah. And
it's unfair on the GPs to expect them to visit everyone and have their lunch in 2 hours, too.
That's true. Am I right in thinking, from Peter, Marguerite and Rosemary, that I was unaware that... is there any GPs that do home visits?
No. I was given money in 2004, I think. I was given taxi money by my lovely doctor at the time. She was absolutely an angel, and I rang her up and said I couldn't make it down in time. It was a 2 bus rides away because I'd moved home, and I had 2 babies. I had no car, and one of them was sick, and she paid the taxi when the taxi came. She just told me to get in a taxi.
Yeah.
You know, and like it wasn't anyone's fault, and that was back way years ago, you know. So I wasn't aware up till then either that this had stopped. But then again, when I found out that the GP had to visit everybody on their list and have their lunch as well and be back for more surgery at 3 or 2:30 or something, I found that quite... too much as well for a doctor, any doctor, any person.
Joe, could I come in there, please?
Yes, Marguerite, yes.
Yeah. Look, a lot of practices, they're not all single-handed practices. They've more than one doctor and there could be at least some time allocated for one of the doctors of the practice to do home visits, or they could take them in turns to do, you know, their patients on a Tuesday or a Monday or whatever. There's no excuse for leaving people and just telling them to go into A&E. And I have personally spent many a night on a trolley or a chair in an A&E department. And I can tell you now, quite categorically, I don't even want to be brought in dead to an accident department.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I would be against. A&E is not fit for people to be sitting there for 12 hours. They don't have any food. They don't have anywhere to go. Like, what are you supposed to do? Sit in a chair?
I wouldn't send my cat there.
No. And there's no food, there's no drink, there's not even a drink of water to get. If you can't walk, say if you broke your leg.
You can't talk to anybody, you're locked out and you could collapse in the waiting room and be taken for a drunk when you've had a head injury. And I'm talking now from professional experience. I won't give you any more details than that. Okay. But it's frankly, it's appalling. And I can recall many years ago, there was kindness. They just don't care now. They couldn't care less. And, you know, if you collapse, tough.
And yeah, that, Annette Foran is just, stay with us for a second, Rosemary. Annette Foran.
Hello, Paul.
What happened in your situation, Annette?
Well, on the 9th of May 2020, I collapsed here. I live alone.
Yeah.
And as it turned, I broke my arm and my ankle having a seizure. And as it turned out, I had septicemia.
Yeah.
So I rang 999 and the National Ambulance Service refused to send me an ambulance. So I have no idea of time, but I eventually ended up at the local hospital where I went into seizure again. I ended up in life support and in a coma. And I went from being a normal person to being a cripple, so to speak. And my shoulder was repaired by a wonderful surgeon in Tullamore Hospital, but it was rebroken in the other hospital, so it's still broken.
But you're saying that you dialed, you're outside Dublin or outside the cities. You dialed 999 and the ambulance said, no, we won't come.
Yes. It was literally phone a friend. Right. And this was now at the start.
Well, did they say we have problems with, which they have,
nothing.
We have problems with ambulances. You'd be better off trying to get a friend to bring you in.
No, he said, you are not an emergency. Get a friend to bring you.
Yeah.
Now, you see, I didn't know I had sepsis.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, how can they diagnose over the phone? If someone dies 999,
But you see, 2 days previously, I'd rung my doctor and she had given me a diagnosis, which was, you know... But anyway, I had a very bad kidney infection, which turned into sepsis.
Okay, sounds slightly... And how are you now? Are you at home or...?
I'm at home, but it took me 6 months to get home because I went for 6 weeks into a wonderful nursing home, but I ended up, to no fault of mine, not theirs, having to stay there till November. So I'm home now, but I'm completely, if I need to go to my GP, I have to call upon the services of our local community Garda.
To bring you the Gardaí, bring you down.
Oh, he is he's absolutely amazing.
That's incredible.
Amazing, and
what would happen? And what would happen in the? It's the same.
Sorry.
No, Marguerite and Peter, they're saying we can't get down. The people they're talking about. But anyway, yeah, Annette, I'm glad you're at home.
Come back in, Joe. Peter here. It's not GP bashing that I'm on about.
I know that. I know that.
As I said, like my mother's GP has been brilliant over the years.
Yeah.
Let me bring in Dr. Matt Kiley, who's in Anacotti in Limerick. Matt, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you keeping?
Thanks. Good. Thanks. Tell us the GP side.
Well, listen. Just a background. I am a GP for 15 years. I'm from a long generation of doctors. I'm a third generation medic. I trained in this country and I've worked abroad in Vancouver and I worked as a GP there. So basically, there is a massive crisis in general practice, but I just don't think the public are informed about where we're at.
Okay.
Essentially, what's happened is that services have been removed from general practice, including the ability to do house calls.
Ah.
We are not paid for doing house calls. In contradiction to that, I would be paid 6 times more for doing a house call if you were in a nursing home. Okay, so if you're 75 years of age and you're in a nursing home, I get paid 6 times. That's which I get paid for looking at you and looking after you in your own home. Now, My solution to this as a small general practitioner of long standing is I use an awful lot of WhatsApp, I use an awful lot of technology to make sure my patients are well looked after, and I do my own on-call myself. If you derogate your duty to whatever on-call service that's there, they won't know your patient's notes, they won't know your patient.
Of course.
Complex patients need a personal physician who knows the patient well. But I got to say, my hat's off to the ambulance service. I love the ambulance guys. They are absolutely brilliant at what they do. And I've no problem calling the ambulance service for anything that involves a likely transfer to hospital or a complex thing that I can deal with myself. And, you know, I just think the public are very poorly informed about the crisis. And it is a crisis. We are leaking so many GPs and doctors abroad. It's not funny. I'm sure there's professors of surgery doing Botox now because it's easier and cheaper, right? 490 interns left this year to go to Australia because it's terrible working in hospitals here. Terrible. It's awful. My wife is a consultant. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Can I come in there, Joe, please?
Yeah, who's that? Marguerite, is it? Yeah.
Marguerite here. Yeah, can I come in there?
Yeah, go on.
So I understand that, Doctor. I'm coming at it from a professional background and a very long-tailed medical family.
Yeah.
I am not a public patient. I would have had to pay whether I go to the surgery or not. And therefore, there are patients who are private patients, and I'm not going into age or eligibilities for medical cards or anything else. I'm just saying that there are patients who are private patients who would pay anyway when they go to the surgery. So why shouldn't they pay when the doctor comes to them? If the doctor knows they're his patient, he knows very well what their status is.
That's an excellent point you raise, and there is a place for a private on-call, a home delivery service, but it's not happened in Ireland for many reasons. Essentially, we have an ethical problem charging people over 70. They've paid their tax, they're due the service. I don't charge over 70s for the basic level of care I provide. I think it's unethical. I don't...
I'd be delighted to be your patient, doctor.
Okay, keep going, Matt. Yeah.
Well, of course, I mean, I'm only one hand at the rudder here. There's only 3,500 GPs, and I mean, it sounds like a lot, but patients' complexity has become massive in the last 20 years. So I might have a typical patient with diabetes, Parkinson's, dementia, heart failure, atrial fibrillation, pre-existing bowel cancer that's been cured, and possibly undergoing another leukemic or myelomatous type of condition. So these are incredibly complex patients, and we are paid precisely pennies. You can't, I suppose I'm a third generation medic, but I would say I'm a businessman number one. You cannot run a business based on thin air. And the HSC know this. But like the only people who seem to get into the politics of running the HSC and the GPs who've talked to this are the wealthy GPs. An average Joe GP like me is, my opinion doesn't count. I just keep my head down, do my day's work, and try and get home before 7 o'clock. And then I'm answering WhatsApps until 9 or 10. Okay. But luckily, my patients respect me because I respect them.
And Matt, I just want to ask Matt a question. How did that anomaly arise where you say, if you have a patient in a nursing home...
Years ago, I did a house call up a ladder into someone's bedroom, an elderly lady's bedroom, because her 96-year-old home carer had accidentally broke the key in the lock. There was no problem to me. I'm well used to shinning up ladders, and I've been well known in my day to do so. But the lady herself was 92. She needed a house call. She was chesty and phlegmy and all that. Yeah. So I went up the ladder into her bedroom. I saw the patient, managed her. Then I kicked in the bedroom door the opposite way out to get her out of there, right?
That's
and her 96-year-old lady, neighbour, helped look after her. But you see, there was a social system to look after carer's allowance. So that carer's allowance doesn't sit you. That doesn't seem to be existing anymore. It seems to have dissolved. And so the social cohesion has gone in the community. And if you talk to my public health nurse, sure, I even hardly even see her because she's
on the go all the time. And Matt, do you know of any GPs who are doing house calls?
I would do a house call once every blue moon to just make sure that not... you know, and the reason we don't do house calls, they're incredibly inefficient. Yeah. You have to get out of the building, you have to da-da-da-da, and yeah, all that.
Parking, and all shebang. Traffic.
Exactly.
How does the doctor's patient get their flu jab? Does he visit for that?
Can you repeat that again, please?
The flu jab.
How do your patients who are confined to their homes get their flu jabs? Do you visit for that?
I'm lucky in that my patients are they're for the most part mobile, but their sons and daughters bring them out to me. I have a 95 and 6-year-old that comes out to me with their son who's in their 60s. And I give them the flu shot and all that. And I've done the COVID to a certain degree, but I have to step back from the COVID because it was a massive workload. Again, interfering with the basic job of our day, which is looking after patients.
Lots of pharmacists are doing flu jabs as well, maybe.
Yeah, and they're fantastic. Yeah. My pharmacists are brilliant. I love them.
There are people that are confined to bed, like my father was.
I remember working in Vancouver several years ago, and they had got rid of house calls. GPs had left doing house calls just to do walk-in clinics like now, like we have here in Limerick, like walk-in clinics, which are fine. They do a job. But they had a pilot program that two GPs would go and do house calls. And, this was coming from Ireland. I was laughing at them. I said, jeepers, lads, we've only been doing house calls for the last, I'd say, 400, five, I don't know how long, since eternity, basically. And they were doing a pilot program to see how beneficial it was to do house calls in Vancouver City. The answer was incredibly efficient, but you need to be set up for it.
Yeah.
Can I just come in? Can I come in again?
I said earlier on about the interns.
Peter,
why can't we have a group of interns that you know are assigned roles on a regular basis to go out
calls? Can I say, Peter? My granddad, who's a renowned surgeon, professor of surgery, a man called Paddy Kiley, to call him. He started off his medical workload as an intern in the community, and there's an interesting story about why he stopped that. He went on to become a renowned professor of surgery, but he started his internship in the community. An absolutely amazing idea, Peter. Bring it on, is what I say. Bring it on.
Great.
Hillary.
Can I just say there, Joe, in relation to interns, an intern year is the year after the doctor does his final examinations or her final examinations, and they're not medically qualified to practice until they have finished their internship year. It's supposed to be a supervised year. Now, can I just make one other point, please, in relation to, doctors or medical care in the community? The VHI have a system hospital in the home, but it's not available for anybody who just needs antibiotics. You have to be somebody perhaps with cancer or something else. It's ridiculous because it means that the GPs and the practices are, expected to deal with everything that comes in their door, and they're not capable of dealing with it. And then they just pass you on to the hospital, and the hospitals are absolutely full to the guns.
Okay,
I'll just answer those two things. I interns have got 625 points now. None of them are going to be GPs because they're too bright, okay? That's the first thing to say. And I would entirely trust, by the time I was 17, I'd worked in the Mercy Hospital in theatre, and I'd done more procedures, which stood me in great stead, under the auspices of the colleagues there, as a pre-intern. Back in those days, an education was got on the job. So by the time I went to intubate babies at neonates who were born with meconium or whatever, the process of intubating is extremely difficult. So as an intern at 23 years of age, because I had intubated patients in theatre by the time I was 17,
mm-hmm.
I was able to intubate babies that were 900 grams. But you see, because I was given confidence by my father and his colleagues.
Matt, just before I take the break, will you answer the critics that are going to blame it on me because I didn't pick you up on it? You said you need 625 points and people are too bright to become GPs. Will you write the letters to all the people who complain to me? What do you...
Oh, listen to me. Listen to me. Joe, as you know and I know, we'll say common sense is dead and gone. And if you need to be that bright to be helpful, things are going astray.
625.
Crazy.
I will let you in after the break, Marguerite. Joe at rt.ie and wait.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
The issue was raised by Peter, who's very worried. His mother is bedbound, essentially, and housebound, but can't get a GP to call. And Peter's opened a hornet's nest because of now. We are now discovering that there are very few, if any, GPs in Ireland who will do house calls anymore. And Dr. Matt Kiley, who's a GP in Anacotti in Limerick, points out they don't get paid for house calls. But if the patient was in a nursing home, they would get paid a very significant amount for making that call, but not to the family home, which is bizarre. Hilary Cran, Hilary.
They would get paid.
Hilary, your point, please, Hilary.
Well, Joe, I don't want to talk about the GPs not visiting. It was just the gentleman who rang about his mother who had ovarian cancer. I just want to say that last year my partner died from a terminal illness, but his consultant directed him to the hospice home care team. He was given a medical card through the hospice because of his diagnosis, and we had excellent care and from the hospice and from the district nurse. Just because you refer to the hospice doesn't mean you're dying in the morning.
Of course.
They just have such an excellent system.
Okay.
And I just wanted to suggest that perhaps he could get the consultant to refer his mum, and he might get all his problems sorted. Because when I heard the word morphine mentioned by him, I thought, well, that's exactly where the hospice were so wonderful, because I wasn't in a position to know much about it, but I was clearly directed in everything to do, and it worked very well. So that's really all I wanted to say.
Okay, and well said, Hilary. Thanks indeed.
Okay.
Mary, you say you have a great GP service and he or she does do call-outs.
Absolutely. My mum is in her 90s, has a medical condition requiring bloods taken every 3 months.
Okay.
And for the whole of the COVID crisis, the GP came to the house and did my mother's bloods.
Wow.
Without question, without insurance, without mentioning insurance, whatever. I'd love to give that GP due thanks, but I can do it in person, but I certainly couldn't mention the person on air.
When you said that they took bloods, what? They didn't come into the house, did they?
Absolutely.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Gowned, gloved, masked, you name it. They came into the house. It was only my mother and the GP, and I was standing by in case of any issues.
Okay. And there was no, he didn't say I'm not coming, or he or she didn't say I'm not coming because
of COVID. Never, ever said it. Never, ever.
Okay,
and in fact, when things eased off a bit, I actually suggested to that GP that maybe I could transport my mother with her wheelchair and what have you to the practice. And now the practice nurse takes the bloods. And it's not, taking bloods is not really a completely doctor issue.
We haven't
enough people in the community who are trained to be phlebotomists.
Yeah.
They could do the visiting. It's not a doctor thing.
Okay. Thanks, Mary. Michael Bourke. Michael, your situation, please.
When my mother came to live with us, we went to our local GP to register, knowing that there would come a time when we'd need to.
Yeah.
And it was better have her registered in advance. And the first thing that was said was, well, fine, we'll register her, but we don't do house calls.
Okay.
And at that stage, that wasn't an issue because we were still able to transport her in the car.
Okay.
Later, it did become an issue. And the clinic, that the GP's clinic that we go to, they have a number of practice nurses. And one of those is constantly on the road and would call here twice a year to take bloods. She'd give a general check over on the usual things with my mother on her general condition. And would administer, if there were certain medications like Prolia that a lot of older people need to have, she would administer that as well. And that system worked very well.
Yeah. Okay, I have a long response here from the HSE. I'd need to take a week off to read it, but I'll try and read it during a break in the next few minutes. So, Michael, you're happy with the service?
We were happy, and yeah. As things progressed and my mother's condition became more difficult, if I needed, I could ring, and sometimes it was hard getting through on the phone, but that's just the way it is. You'd get to talk to the doctor, and they actually started to offer to come out. Sometimes I said yes, sometimes I said no. We just needed the prescription because we knew what it was. And when we did need them urgently, despite it being 7 or 8 kilometres away and they were in surgery, they could be here in 10 minutes. I don't know how they got here without blue lights in 10 minutes. But they were very accommodating and responsive to her needs as things progressed.
Okay. I'm trying to get the sting of the HSE statement, Peter. They basically said, thanks, Michael. Community Healthcare Dublin South, Kildare and West Wicklow has a contractual relationship for the provision of an out-of-hours GP service for medical cards holders in the region. Does that apply to you? Is your mother a medical card? Well, geez, if she's over 70.
Oh, she has a medical card, yeah. All right, yeah.
Well, they're basically saying ring DubDoc or MediDoc or...
Okay, well, as I said, Joe, we've done that previously and they needed to get access to her files, which weren't forthcoming. So,
okay.
And referring back to that nice lady there, Hilary, about the community care team in the hospice, as I said, she was part of that. She was registered for that service. She has been to the hospice for respite. But, you know, earlier on this year, she was doing so well that they discharged her. So the only way she can go back into that system is to be referred back in by her GP, and that would need a visit to see what her position is. So it's catch 22 again.
That sounds like it. Okay, Dr. Matt Kiley, you mentioned what, 400, how many qualified doctors left for Australia?
490, I believe.
Good God.
And we say it's about the bucket filling. It's not about the bucket filling, it's about the bucket leaking. We're leaking more doctors than we're actually making. And it seems to be, since I started medicine, a kind of a fait accompli that anyone who's anybody goes abroad, and more people are looking back and saying, well, I'm not going to come back as a yellow pad consultant because the salary's gone down by 30%. I think that's twice the salary in Australia. So why would I come back and scrimp and save to have an average lifestyle here when I've been a 625 pointer and a leaving sort of type of thing? I mean, it's a fair wage for a fair job. I mean, like I run a small GMS practice with a larger, probably private component. But I have to be a savvy businessman just to keep the practice going. No doubt about it. Like, there's no way I'd support a family on my salary if I was on my own. My missus as a consultant, and that's a happy fucking touch. Well, we've worked damn hard to get to where we're at.
Yeah.
But I would say is that there's a lack of joined up thinking. I just recently there was a GP advertisement for a coordinated tenure of GPs recently, and basically the job description came up like something that you'd write in Santa's grotto. It had aspirations of everything, and the bottom line there at the end, it was for a very, very modest remuneration.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I said, who in their right mind would do this job? To coordinate GPs would be like herding bag of cats. I mean, not that we are like that, but we're by definition, as doctors, you're trained to be to disagree with the other doctor.
Yeah.
Because if you agree with the other doctor, it's a fait accompli that you're going to make a mistake with the patient. So in fact, we're trained to be quite quickly, not quickly, but combative, maybe assertive is the word I'm looking for. Because if you agree with the other doctor's diagnosis, you will definitely let the patient go south. Just going back to the house call thing, I would love to house calls. No better information about the patient. You walk in upon a diabetic patient and there's bottles of 7-Up all over the place.
Yeah.
And the patient is diabetic and looking at you and they're blind. They can't even read their medication. Taking them wrong. And you wonder then why your fancy medication and your fancy regime in the office aren't doing well because the patient has no support. And do you know, it's very frustrating being a GP nowadays. In fact, my four kids, none of them are going to do medicine, and that's the last line of Kylie's in my tract of doctors. And I mean, we can place our heritage back to somewhere in the 1500s. So we're not from we're from a long line of medics over the years. And for me, I think money, unfortunately, even though I talk about money, has become just badly entwined with private healthcare, with public healthcare service commitments. And I actually would, if the HSC told me in the morning, become an employee, I would say, dandy, bring it on. Okay. Give me a pension, give me my 30-something, 40 hours a week, and I love you. No problem.
Okay, say what it's joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Yeah, the HSE statement again. The HSE cannot comment on individual cases. We understand that. We weren't. The following process is applied when a call is received by the provider. The patient is dealt with individual medical needs of that patient. This can be either by way of a consult with a nurse or a doctor. The outcome of the consultation with the nurse, doctor, and the patient. But they don't. The problem is that GPs are not making health calls, as Matt Kylie explained so powerfully, that they're run off their feet. If those who aren't run out of the country, those who are left are run off their feet. And he said it's as simple as that. And he revealed that if that person was in a nursing home, he would receive a significant amount, six times the amount, to visit that person in a nursing home as they do. They don't get paid anything extra to visit them at home. Back to the scam, the tech scam. Let's warn people. Rose, good afternoon.
I was in the Telemore show yesterday, okay. And I got this text say, "Hi, Ma, my phone has crashed. Can you contact me on this new number?" So I looked at it and decided, oh, maybe it is a scam.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to too many of Joe's programs, and he's always warning us about scams.
Right,
so
right.
I didn't do anything about it. So I asked the family this morning on the WhatsApp, and none of them had texted me. So I was just saying that the scam is fresh and alive at the moment.
And it's thriving in Australia.
Sorry?
It's thriving in Australia.
Yeah. I have a son out in Australia, and he texted and he sent me a link to say
that... Send me the money.
It's out in Australia, and that a lot of people were caught out. So just to warn people, don't work on impulse. The children will be all right.
Yeah, the kids are all right. The kids are all right. They are. They'll manage. And if it is an emergency, you'll find out about it quick enough through loads of different, and hopefully that never occur. But just be very, very wary. That's all of these. It's a lot of it around at the minute because a lot of people are away. Okay, Rose, thanks indeed. Yeah. Back to GPs and Mary, what happened? Your mother was discharged from hospital last Tuesday. What happened?
Hi, Joe. It's actually Gertie, not Mary.
Okay, sorry, okay. Thanks,
Gertie. No, you're grand. My mum, she's 85, was discharged under palliative care into our care. We took her home last Tuesday.
Okay.
She came to live with us 2 years ago.
Understand.
And under the advice, it's terminal cancer that she has with just weeks remaining. And under the advice of the palliative doctor before discharge, I was informed to contact the GP and let them know of the situation so that she would be escalated in terms of priority for care purposes. And I was informed to actually ask the GP when they would make a house visit. I got an email back within minutes to say, you can contact us by phone on a phone number, but unfortunately the line's very busy. As Dublin 15 is outside of our catchment area, we will not do house calls. You can, however, contact the out-of-air service. Now, an understatement to say, I was flabbergasted. And since then, even just trying to get something simple like anti-sickness medication, there's emails bouncing backwards and forwards. They're telling us they've sent the prescription to the pharmacy. The pharmacy hasn't received the prescription. There hasn't even been a phone call looking, you know, to provide some sympathy or compassion. These people really need to realise there's a family on the end of that email who are starting a grieving process and who are looking for any bit of help. And it's just so stressful and so difficult.
And Gertie, have the hospice any responsibility?
Yeah, the palliative doctor came out last Thursday.
Okay.
And like, he's been amazing, but he did inform us, which I didn't know, that the GP would have to make a house call just to basically eyeball my mother and for certification process procedures, you know, when the time comes, that he would actually have to sign their certificate. Now, I am stressed to the nines before this has happened, trying to work through this process, and I'm not getting any assistance whatsoever. And the GP, I just keep hitting a brick wall. They won't even pick up the phone to say, oh, my God.
And will they say from their side, we're run off our feet?
No, it's literally just, I think it's just admin are reading the email and it's just a script they're following. There's no empathy, there's no compassion, apology, absolutely nothing. I mean, to say it's stressful is an understatement.
Okay, stay listening, Gertie, for a few minutes. Jerry Reynolds is your GP does house calls, Jerry.
He does, and is an absolute gentleman, Joe.
Okay, and what's the procedure for getting a house call?
I suppose the benefit of living in a rural area, where he knows me, knows my family, knows my full family history, and would be somewhat a friend as much as anything. So my heart bleeds to hear those stories today where families cannot get...
And have you noticed in recent years, Jerry, that your GP, he or her, has become busier?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. But they still find time. Well, okay, well, it's...
They're still, and I know, I do know that they do it on their own time. You know,
and did you know they don't get paid extra?
Yeah.
Incredible, yeah. Incredible.
And it is one of the benefits of living in a rural area.
Yeah.
People in cities, and my heart bleeds today for those families that I hear of, can't get a GP. I'm fortunate enough, Joe, to have a good job and pay my taxes. And my heart bleeds for people who just cannot get basic services. Surely that's what I'm paying my taxes for.
Yeah, and everyone, whether they're working or not, pays taxes. If you buy a pair of shoes or you buy... Anyway, but I take your point. Jerry, thanks indeed, and stay well. Denise Dunphy. Denise, your situation...
Hi, Joe. I'm actually feel like I'm very, very lucky in the service that we had from our GP for my mum. My mum, she was 94. She passed away in May. But for the last 2 years of her life, she was very housebound. She's terribly frail. She had been a type 2 diabetic, so she had to have her blood tests taken, obviously, for diabetes. The GP arranged for a nurse to come out to the house. So all of her blood tests, and she got her COVID jabs. Everything she needed happened at home, and a nurse came out, and that was organised by her GP practice. Now, it was obviously mum had a medical card, so it wasn't a private thing that happened. So there is obviously a service available. So I was in the car and I was listening to your caller, but his mother in her 90s, that she couldn't get her blood test. Now, perhaps it's different for cancer patients. My mother didn't have cancer. But I would imagine blood tests are blood tests. So if one GP service can can arrange for the HSE to send a nurse out to one 90-year-old woman. You know, I really don't see why the same can't be done for your caller.
Dr. Matt Coyote is still there. Matt, hopefully a better line. But Matt, it does vary from GP to GP, does it?
It does. But see, we're disparate with businesses. I mean, you have the multi-group practice with several GPs, and then you have the single practitioner. But the business model is utterly different. The key thing we're pointing out is, and I think the caller is saying, is joined up thinking. Yeah. I have no problem having a community phlebotomist who will help me out doing bloods in the community, nursing things out. But as an employer of a nurse, it's another pressure on. And I don't have a nurse. And that's to my chagrin and my disappointment. But I probably am a reluctant employer anyway. That's the way I'm built. I'm more of a medic than a businessman. And I really just felt that I'd be trying to drum up work for the nurse sometimes. And I'd say, oh, God, I'll get around to getting a nurse. I will. But it's not that the nurses aren't capable of doing all of this. In fact, the day is coming soon that there'll be GP nurses. And I bring it on. I'd be more than happy and delighted if the government employed GP nurses in my practice. But, you know, during COVID, the private and the public services went to collapse. And I remember one colleague telling me he had £50,000 in unpaid wages 1 month.
Wow.
Right? And I'm not able to do that. I'm a doctor. I'm not a businessman. So why would I take that on? So I'm all for whatever helps the patient. And my heart bleeds when I hear all those folk, and I know them to be the case, in the community who haven't a GP, someone they can trust, they can ring at a moment's notice, and or in my case, WhatsApp or whatever. And it's the basic duty of care. That's why you did the job in the first case.
Okay, stay with us, Joe at rt.ie. I'll come back in a sec, I promise.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Yvonne Hamilton in Tarleton. Yvonne, good afternoon. What's your situation, your mother?
Yeah, hi, Joe. Well, I was just interested in the programme today by talking about GP home calls, but also to expand on that, if somebody is elderly and at home, there are other services that are not available that are equally as important, such as dental care.
Oh, God.
There is no dental, to the best of my knowledge, there are no dental services, dental care available to the home for an older person or indeed anybody that for whatever reason can't make it into a practice. I have a friend in England whose mother has passed away earlier this year in her 90s. She was at home. She had dental care to her home. She had ophthalmic services. That is another one. Mm-hmm. I think it's very, very limited. I think it may depend on where you are in the country, if indeed an optician would agree to come out and see you. But the dental is worrying because your oral health
affects your whole body,
your whole system.
Let me put the last word to Dr. Matt Coyley. Matt, are you aware of that? Are there call-out services for our dentists to individual homes or indeed to nursing homes? Are you aware?
I mean, I'm aware of what works and what doesn't work. We all work with flow. So if something is working, it's almost seamless. But the bottom line is that there's an awful lot of disjointed and there's no over system running it like a doctor would. As I said, we probably need a surgeon general, someone who can actually crack a whip and solve the problem, because we're going by committee, dead by committee. So like, patients should be able to ring up and help, like the Innovations Helpline in Canada. And they say it's a problem. They say, we have a problem, solve it.
Thank you so much for your time, by the way, Matt. I really appreciate it. You're busy. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Brenda Dunhill produced, and Ray Darcy is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.